Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. This podcast is sponsored by Montana's great state parks. Visit fwp.mt.gov.
Searching for adventure that supports local community, boosts the economy, and gets you outside? Get away to one of Montana's 55 state parks. For events, park guidelines, and more, visit fwp.mt.gov/stateparks. See you out there.
All right, we're getting pretty close to it. Going to be doing some interviews this week, a number of them. We'll talk about that. First up on the plate, Montana Supreme Court Chief Justice candidate Corey Swanson, going to join us to discuss that bid for the state's high court. Grew up in Montana, serves as a colonel in the Montana Army National Guard, and has been prosecuting crimes as a Broward County attorney since 2014. So Corey's going to join us here in just a little bit. Get the chance to know him a little more and his views on the issues that surround this year's critical Supreme Court elections. That today, you know, I can't help it. I know the guy a little bit. You know, when you talk to him, you can just get a sense of, you know, where his heart is about family and community and you know, what he understands about Montana's constitutional law. I am impressed. So this is going to kind of sound a little bit, as I talk about his bio here a little bit like an endorsement, but okay, it is. All right. Because I don't know, I don't have a bunch of prepared stuff here. I just feel this man's humility. Yeah, he's got great talent. He's a great speaker, great understanding, and his bio will hopefully, you know, bear that out to you. But when you talk with him, his humility is in place, and that's what I think we need in our court system a little bit, especially at our Supreme Court. And that's in comparison to his opponent for the Supreme Court, and that's Jerry Lynch. You know, I'm not going to sit here and talk just a ton in opposition to Jerry Lynch. There is a pretty revealing op-ed. I saw the Missoulian pick it up. This is from Nell Swindoll, he's a former judge in Montana, a lot of years in Montana. He talks about, you know, what he knows about Jerry Lynch, and it's not very flattering, especially in the area of humility. And so, I mean, you can find that. There's also, you know, something that points to how Jerry Lynch has spoken on some of the issues. And, well, what Nell says, too, and he says a lot of things here about arrogance, but I'm not going to go into it. But, he says that Lynch speaks as if he's running to be a legislator. And that's troubling to me. You can take that. I'm not publishing that anywhere. I'm glad that a paper picked that up because, I mean, Nell's has got standing. And information, and we need to be informed voters here in that regard. But I just get impressed with the approach and the humility that Corey Swanson brings to the forums. Now, I had a chance to chat with him. Of course, known Corey over the years. He's let me go through his bio here, okay? And then we'll take a break and we'll get him on the line here. But fourth generation Montanan, and he grew up on the High Line. And it doesn't matter where you grow up in Montana. If you're growing up in Montana, I know what your roots are. I think I know some of those values because I shared them as we were growing up. And we're not that far off in age. He comes from a large family with roots in the military, the ministry, and blue-collar work. What does that tell you, right, about humility? Swanson studied, and this is coming from his website, Swanson for Justice. Swanson studied farm and ranch management at Montana State University in Bozeman. He transferred to Carroll College in Helena and graduated with distinction in 2000, and then from the University of Montana Law School with honors in 2004. And look it, he went through law school in 4 years. Carroll College graduated in 2000, 4 years. He has got his degree with honors at the University of Montana. You probably don't hear him talk about that, but I think that speaks out. During these school years, Swanson became an accomplished public speaker. He was the leader of the 1999 Carroll College National Champion debate team. That goes back a little bit, but he's a national champion when it comes in debate. And what does that tell you? You don't win debates by, you know, calling your opponent names or not understanding the issue and not having your facts and your ducks in a row. 19, congratulations, you know, to all that. And then in 2000 was awarded for the most speech victories of all college competitors in Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, and Alaska. Then Swanson joined the Montana Army National Guard in June of 1997, commissioned as a second lieutenant, and then three deployments in the Middle East with the Montana National Guard, 163rd. He commanded the 163rd Combined Arms Battalion, pardon me, twice for overseas deployments, Operation Spartan Shield in 2022, currently a colonel there in Montana's National Guard. And he does have a Bronze Star Medal. He does have a Meritorious Service Medal and the Army Commendation Medal. You don't hear him talk about these things an awful lot. I'm glad. I mean, I've seen a number of candidate bios on the website, and they'll put everything and everything they can on about it. But this is solid and concise. And I just hope that that comes across as we chat with him. Let's see. After his first deployment, Swanson joined and then became partner in a law firm in Helena. Kind of moving on. In 2013, Swanson was hired as Deputy Attorney General in the Montana Department of Justice, served under Tim Fox, who has recommended him, endorsed him. In that role, he was the lead in-house counsel and lead trial counsel for the Montana versus Wyoming water case before a special master of the United States Supreme Court, which was the longest Montana DOJ trial in recent years. 2014, elected to the Broadwater County Attorney's Office there. He prosecutes approximately 50 felonies and 300 misdemeanors per year. Everything from speeding tickets to homicides there as well. He has got this court experience. And then he saves the best for last. He married his wife, Julie Platteshaw. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, of Manhattan. And then they reside in Townsend. Talked about when we had a chance to chat this last week about his family a little bit. Volleyball. He helps coach youth sports, active in 4-H and their church as well. I don't know. Again, you know, I try to avoid making, you know, outright endorsements, but I am just trying to highlight imagine the kind of energy and success that Corey has had, you know, in his life so far, career, but life more importantly, with a couple of kids as well, and how he, you know, gets into community there. Imagine if all that energy is poured into understanding and working on particular cases of our Montana Constitution. I think it's going to be very, very thoughtful. So I'm very high on this candidate, and we'll speak with him as we come on back. Corey Swanson for Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court. As we speak with Corey Swanson, the Broadwater County attorney and also a Supreme Court Chief Justice candidate for the state of Montana. Corey, how you doing, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the program.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate that. Enjoyed chatting with you the other day. You might have heard a little bit. I was sort of kind of bragging on you. I'll let you bear that out. I didn't want to embarrass you. I appreciate you know, your success in a lot of things and your humility about all that. But we were chatting, just about your kids and, you know, about sports. And what'd you do this weekend? Get out and throw something up in the air?
Let's see. What did I do this weekend? I was in, after we did the Billings event last week, we went to Missoula and I did a dinner Thursday night. And then Friday we had a candidate forum, the last candidate forum of the campaign. I think we did like seven of them.
Yeah.
And then, got home Friday in time for a football game, Townsend playing Columbus. And then, my daughter had a volleyball game Saturday, and then I did a whole bunch of fundraising calls and worked in the yard yesterday. So, and went to church yesterday morning. So, you know, a good family weekend, and did get a little campaigning in as well.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I appreciate that. You know, it seems to me like you bring some balance. I'm looking at your bio. I kind of talked about it a little bit. You know, where you grew up, but all those things that you tackled, you know, in growing up, what motivates you most? You know, in all those experiences, a colonel in the Army National Guard, deployments, you know, national speech champion. You've been fighting crime there in Broadwater County. You know, what of all of that speaks to who Corey Swanson is?
Well, there's an old saying. There's a guy named John Maxwell who's a leadership teacher, author, and he has this old saying, and I think it fits my life. He said, any success I got the old-fashioned way, by overcoming my own laziness and ignorance every step of the way.
Well, that speaks to truth, too much truth for some of us here as well. But you know,
yeah, well, I mean, human beings, I mean, none of us are perfect. That's the whole point. We have to keep fighting, keep learning, keep moving on step by step. You were talking a little bit about the military experience that I have, and on my last deployment, I got pulled in suddenly to take over for a commander who couldn't finish the mission. So I got over to the Middle East, and my whole team was already over there. So I took over, it was about 1,100 and some people, big task force, spread all over six countries, and some of whom I didn't even see in person for a long time because we were remote, and I had to eventually travel to see them. But when I landed, they kind of want to know, well, who is this guy? And I knew probably a third of them from prior commands, but a bunch of them weren't from Montana. They were from all over the place. And so when you take over a unit, what you typically do is you tell them your command philosophy. And all that is basically commander telling soldiers, here's what I expect of you, and here's what you can expect of me. So I gave that a lot of thought. When I landed, I told them there's five fundamentals of a good team and what I want our team to be. And number one is always do the hard right thing over the easy wrong thing. Number two is commit yourself to being a learning organization, which means you've got to find your mistakes, understand them, analyze them, and learn from them. Number three is just commit yourself to teamwork, which means to, you know, selfless work together, and everyone understand how their part helps the others do their work. Number four is it's all about risk. The Army is, you know, very dangerous business when you're up against an enemy. And so how to aggressively do your mission while understanding risk. And you can't avoid risk. It's more a matter of where you accept risk and how you train into that risk in order to do your job during the hardest time. And then the last one is fight for the integrity of your unit, which means as a team, you've got to watch out for each other. You got to protect each other from, you know, in the Army, there's a problem with sexual harassment, or there's a problem of moral failure and standards. And so we have to fight for the integrity of the unit. So that was kind of a 5-point thing that I told them based on many years of experience prior to that. But it all could boil down to the very first one. Do the hard right thing over the easy wrong thing every time.
And I can see, and we'll take a break here in about a minute, but I can see those things lining up in your approach toward jurisprudence, or you know, maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, I think that's right. So the leadership challenge of the judicial branch that the Chief Justice takes on is going to be a unique leadership challenge, and I can't talk about that in a minute. That's too long and too short of a time.
8-3, Corey. It's a long haul, isn't it? Campaigning.
It's a long haul. I got into the race later than some of the others. I got in right after Thanksgiving last year, but still, you know, that's a long time. And tomorrow will be 3 weeks to election day. Yeah. So I think we're all excited. I think the voters are excited too. I think they're probably tired of being bombarded by everyone's advertising.
Yeah, we're ready for it. I'd like to see actually our campaign season shortened up a little bit but let's get back to what you were talking about. Deployed, you took over, deployed overseas, I should say, with the Army National Guard. You commanded a unit there. You took over, and you talked about some of these priorities that you wanted your unit to have. I'm just curious about how those apply on the bench. I'll just recap real quickly. Do the hard right things over the easy wrong things. Learn, you know, be a team that learns, be a team that's selfless. Understand risk, which means confidently approach risk and fight for integrity. How do those things apply on the bench?
Well, I think, number one, they apply to any team. And number two, the judiciary is a team. And you take any group of three or more people doing anything in life, and I think you have a team. And then you also have to have leadership to move that team in the direction. You need unity of effort, right? And unity of effort, that's how you accomplish more by a team than by just individual endeavors. When you go together, you need unity of effort. So you have to have a purpose that unifies those people together, and they need a shared understanding of what their goals are. And then that unity of effort helps you move to that direction. So if you take a look at the Montana judiciary, you have the Montana Supreme Court, which is 7 members, but you also have judges all over the entire state. And that's a widespread organization. Each, you know, district judge, and they're in different communities, they're facing different pressures, they have their own caseload. They have their own, you know, the judges will have their own problems. They'll have someone that gets sick with bad disease or whatever. And so caring for your members is part of that. But then ultimately, they're part of a larger team, which is the state government. So they have to understand their role and not necessarily intruding on the roles of others, like the legislature, or, you know, the Supreme Court can't redo the work of the district court judges. So there's an understanding of everyone's job, and there's a commitment to the end goal, which isn't necessarily one case at a time, but it's collectively you want rule of law. You want stable, predictable, clear, and timely case decisions that helps all the people that who are our bosses, really. So that leadership approach is really how I intend to work as Chief Justice if I get elected. Everyone thinks the Army is a position where you just go into the commander and you bark orders and people do it, and it's really not that way. It's a human endeavor, which means you have to share your vision, you have to understand the needs of your team members, you have to work together. And then cooperatively, I had to work with a bunch of different parallel or peer organizations where I couldn't order them around, but I had to gain their cooperation so we could accomplish things together. So if you look at the Supreme Court, there's conflicts right now in Helena with the legislature, and there's internal conflicts, and there's needs for modernization. There's just a lot of things that need to be done. And it requires that kind of, I think, leadership. Number one, go in, listen more than you speak initially. Second, understand, really, you know, chase the problems, understand them fully before you solve them. And then try to communicate that vision so that we can all move in the right direction together. It's not an overnight solution to a problem that didn't arise overnight. But ultimately, what we want to do is we want the court to be more effective, better at deciding cases, and timely. And we want judges to be able to know that the organization is going to help them when they need help, and people need to know that the organization is going to render fair and impartial rulings, not based on bias or who they like or don't like, but based on the law and the facts of that case. That's the ultimate goal for every judge, to be not only be fair, but to be perceived as fair.
And I can appreciate you answering my next question in all of that. In viewing those aspects, teamwork, selflessness, fight for integrity, give us a status report then. You did that, but what is the status of our courts in Montana, in that viewpoint, so to speak?
Yeah. And, I tend to look at ways we can make the court better. I think anyone who says, oh, there's nothing wrong here, there's no way we can get better, I think they're really missing the point. That's kind of a negative viewpoint, really, from a leadership point of view, because if you aren't casting hope for your organization to get better, then you're really casting a negative viewpoint. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. Nobody's just static. So I'm always looking for ways to get better. The court's done some really good things. I think Chief Justice McGrath has improved the timeliness of court decisions. They used to take a really, really long time. 20 years ago, you would often wait a year, sometimes 2 years for a court decision, and they're much quicker now. So there's some really good efficiencies that Chief Justice McGrath has introduced. But there are times when the court seems to be favoring liberal outcomes, and there's times when the court seems to be an activist type of methodology of deciding cases rather than a restrained or a judicially conservative type of deciding cases. And those cause problems. Those cause instability in the law. They create a lack of clarity in the law, and they often create extra turmoil that we see when we get to political cases. And people have to remember that political cases are only a small percentage of the total caseload the Supreme Court decides every year. But if they're using that methodology of being activist, then it's going to produce bad case results no matter what type of case it is. And I don't know if you've had Professor Nadelson on the radio program this year. You had, but he did a really good report about analyzing those issues that I certainly enjoyed reading, and I would encourage others to read it.
Yeah, it's a good read. And he's a better writer than some people may think because he's so technical. He's very understanding of deep aspects of the law, but he doesn't write that way. And so, Corey, just to say, I think Rob's going to come on this week. He wrote a memorandum on CI 128. That's that controversial. It's horrible language in my mind that outside groups want to insert in our Constitution regarding abortion. I'm going to try to get him on this week. But yes, that article you talked about, dissertation, I think it's on the Frontier Institute as well. We got to be informed reporters or voters about that. Corey Swanson again, back with us. That's tomorrow. Let's see, what am I doing Wednesday? Oh, Senator Greg Hertz is going to be on the program. And maybe it's Rob Nadelson. Rob is going to come on sometime this week. We're hoping. He wrote a memorandum against CI 128. Again, very informative. He might be on Wednesday or Friday. So Greg might be on Wednesday or Thursday. Anyway, that's not entirely set, but we'll have Senator Greg Hertz come on to talk about the opposition to CI 126 and 127, some constitutional initiatives out there once again that propose to change Montana's primary election system and our general election system. So that is ahead. Let's get back with Corey Swanson here. Corey, again, I appreciate you being here. A couple of things. Let's hit some of these things that I'm taking away from the forum that you guys said you had like 7 forums. I'm really glad that you did a number of forums. I didn't see Jerry Lynch at the last one, your opponent for Chief Justice, but things do happen. I presume that most of the candidates made most of the forums, and there's just a ton to share there. One of my takeaways was, and I see this in the Held versus Montana case. That's that environmental case that they tried to shop all over the country and it picked up here in a Montana court, where litigants are trying to make legislation through lawsuits. And this is what comes from that forum last Wednesday. It's on our Voices of Montana page as well. Talk more about that and examples where you see that and how that does us a disservice.
Yeah, and in that case, so that is before the court right now. They've already briefed it. They've done oral argument. We're waiting on the decision. There's a second case that's similar to that has to do with a permit of a specific facility that was challenged on similar grounds. So we're not sure how all that's going to shake out. But one of the things that came up in that case, and the thing that I think is kind of along the lines of what you're asking, is whether that's even an appropriate case for a lawsuit. So one of the fundamentals of our constitutional system and our court system, which we inherited from English common law, is that to have a case, you have to have something called standing. And standing simply means you have to have an injury of some kind. They don't want theoretical cases. You don't want advisory opinions. You want actual controversies that go to the court. So the plaintiff has to have been injured in some way, and injured by the defendant, because if you get injured by one person and you sue another person, you're not going to get much done. And then it has to be something that the court can actually grant redress or provide some kind of healing from that injury, make them whole, we say. Well, we've seen in prior years, let's dial back a few years to the federal court system when President Obama was in office. There were a lot of cases where liberal plaintiff organizations would sue the federal government over some policy issue, and it basically turned into a friendly lawsuit. The federal government lawyers working for the Obama Department of Justice would then enter into a settlement agreement with the plaintiffs, and they would present it to the judge, and since both parties agreed to it, the judge would sign off on it. It was called a consent decree. And that consent decree would settle the lawsuit, but it would also have the effect of binding law that would change the policy in some way that the federal government was trying to enforce. And that was a pretty widely abused process. I don't know that this is the same type of thing, but it made me think, remember what was going on during the Obama years. It made me wonder if what we're seeing is plaintiffs groups that are trying to abuse that concept of standing in order to change policy, change actual statutes through these lawsuits where you can't win at the legislature, so you sue and try to affect a change of policy by means of a lawsuit. The concern there is, particularly in the Hild case, there's a concern that whether it's an advisory case. In fact, I'm not making that up. Those questions were asked at the oral argument by the Supreme Court. Is this case ripe for a lawsuit, or is this an advisory case, and should we instead wait until we have an actual substantive permit like the other case that's pending to make that kind of a ruling? So that's something you have to really watch out for in terms of how courts decide cases. And that also goes back to that activism versus judicial conservative, spectrum of how courts operate. I believe activism tends to usurp the legislator's role sometimes, and it also, I think, makes less accurate decisions I think less clear and stable law. So I believe judicial conservative or restraint is the correct way to address those issues.
I appreciate that. I think that's a danger. And we've seen groups, do that rather successfully. Will they get the message?
Yeah. And I don't know because, yeah. So here's how that dynamic has played out in my campaign. In my campaign, my opponent, Judge Lynch, has from day one been advocating and advertising, saying, I will fight for certain rights and I'll fight for certain things. And I've said this publicly to his face, I've said it to a lot of people, what his wording was basically dog whistles to liberal plaintiffs organizations and liberal activism organizations saying, I will support your causes through this aggressive use of the courts to change policy. And by the way, you need to fund my campaign. So what's happened over the course of this campaign is that liberal organizations, and I mean, obviously the National Democratic Party has been involved, the ACLU, radical environmentalists, trial lawyers, and then turns out George Soros and Michael Bloomberg. So we're talking the far left are spending millions of dollars to support Judge Lynch and also Judge Bidegary and opposing myself and Judge Wilson. And I have to think that it goes back to those kinds of statements that Judge Lynch has been giving, where he's saying not only is he going to fight for these things, but he's going to fight against the legislature, and that he's indicating bias against the legislature. And in my view is, if you want to fight for policy and you want to have bias, fine. You should run for the legislature to do that. You should not get on the court to exercise that kind of role, because that does abuse and skew the judicial power.
And I think that's fair and poignant criticism as well. Nell Swandell, I shared some of that earlier. He wrote an op-ed, and that was submitted out there. Again, I think some Lee newspapers picked that up. Talks about Lynch speaking as if he's running to be a legislator. And has examples here, too. And I listened to one of them, and it kind of, there's some caution flags here. When he said, this comes from, Judge Lynch, that one of the courts, or he said the Supreme Court's fundamental job is to protect against the supermajority. Now, I can get that in a certain aspect. I wouldn't say it's a fundamental job. I think he called it a power grab, to protect against the majority's power grab. But to me, power grab is very much a subjective language, because is requiring that parents be notified if there are any medical procedures for their minor children, is that a power grab, or is that a pushback from the state's power grab? And so when you're using language like that, that to me points to something that's very subjective, and even highlighting the supermajority, I mean, it shouldn't be about numbers. It ought to be about a little more black and white. You want to comment on that, or compare and contrast that statement?
Yeah. So the court's number one job, obviously, is to decide cases that come to it fairly and correctly and impartially. So the first thing you have to point out is that the court's job isn't to go out and fight against this or that. The courts don't initiate the lawsuits themselves. It's all about lawsuits that come to the court. So the first thing is that seems very backwards. There are court systems out there. You go to South America where the judge is actually seeking the case. It's like they're like a prosecutor. It's a totally different. It's a continental system that's very few cases. Very few Western countries have it. I'll leave it at that. That's not the system that we have. Judges deal with the cases that come to them. They don't go out and get the cases and fight against this or for that. But secondly, when it comes to deciding, say, reviewing the constitutionality of statutes, yes, there is a role for the courts to do. And there may, in fact, be times when the legislature passes something that's clearly unconstitutional, and I'll deal with that. Mm-hmm. But the case law from the Montana Supreme Court says that you presume statutes are constitutional. The statutes have to be proven unconstitutional beyond a reasonable doubt to be stricken down as unconstitutional. And there's different ways that you use it, whether it's a facial challenge or an as-applied challenge. So that language is all about deferring to the legislature. And Judge Lynch's rhetoric is completely the opposite. He's basically saying, we're going to presume that it's unconstitutional when it arrives. And I just think that, again, I think that misconstrues and abuses the power of a judge.
Montana Supreme Court Chief Justice candidate Corey Swanson. A little time here. Let's get to the phone. Skip, thanks for calling, listening in Hamilton. Might have waited too long. Let's get to your question real quick. You're on the air here on Voices with Corey.
Okay, thank you, Tom. And good morning, Corey. Nice to hear you again. And so I'll ask a question that I've asked you actually at meet and greets, that and you gave us a wonderful answers and explained, as you always do, your lectures and soliloquies are so understandable. And the question has to do with precedent law, which your opponent, anytime I've heard him speak or watched an interview or anything, he's always all about that. And then the other thing that he talks about is a constitutional democracy. And I've said this to you before, and it's like the word republic is not in his dictionary intentionally. And if you can address one or either of those, I'd appreciate it. And I want people to know you should be thankful that a man like Corey is stepping up to the plate to run for Supreme Court justice. And in the future of the state of Montana, we're going to be so much better off if we can get him elected. So thank you, sir, for all your efforts. And please try to answer one of both of them.
Thanks, Skip.
Thanks, Skip. Yeah, well, you know, we're really Montana and America are a republic. And that's a republic is where you elect representatives to then make those votes on your behalf. We also have the initiative and referendum parts of our Constitution. So we have democracy, direct democracy in that result. The precedent word, precedent simply means that a rule of law from a prior court as applied to a certain set of facts is basically a ruling that future courts should follow. But the way Judge Lynch and Judge Vitigeri keep using it as a code word to say they will rule for abortion rights in every occasion, and then they beat up on me and Judge Wilson for not making the same pledge. And what we've said every time is it's improper for a judge to say how they will rule on future cases that do not yet exist. We will follow the fundamentals of constitutional jurisprudence, and we'll follow the fundamentals of how you decide cases as a judge, period. Well, because we have given what is the correct answer according to judicial ethics and the way that you judge cases, liberal groups have been opposing us because we have not given them some kind of a blood oath on the issue of abortion. ACLU and Planned Parenthood have spent millions of dollars against us because we didn't violate the code of judicial ethics by saying we're going to pledge outcomes on cases that do not yet exist. The same thing's gone on in other issues. We've had liberal groups that have been falsely accusing me of opposing stream access, and that's actually not true at all. I've supported stream access. When I was working in 2009 supporting a group called Citizens for Balanced Use, which supports public access to land, we brought proposed amendments to help fix basically a stream access bill that was going through the legislature. It needed better language to strengthen kind of specific language on how you deal with fences at bridges to reduce conflict between sportsmen and landowners. And the sponsor of the bill didn't like my amendment, so he made us be listed as opponents to the bill when we continually said we support the bill. Well, we not only supported the bill, we got our amendments on the bill that improved the language on fences, reduced conflict between landowners and sportsmen. It passed by almost unanimous vote through the legislature, and Governor Bullock signed it. So I'm a supporter of stream access to the extent that Governor Bullock signed the bill that I advocated with the amendment that I got put on the bill. And then when I was a county attorney, I also won a case all the way to the Supreme Court. It was called Fortner versus Broadwater Conservation District. And in that case, we strengthened protections for streams as well.
Corey, I'm going to run out of time. Thank you for getting that in.
We're done here.
I appreciate that.
Thanks, Tom, for having me on.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for running. Like Chip said, it's not an easy thing to throw your hat in the ring. I respect all who do. And I just wish you and your family the best. Thank you, Corey. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.